as we try, we have all said the wrong thing at the wrong time. We have all treated someone in a way that does not live up to the good news that we witness in the life of Jesus. At some point, we have all acted from a place of self-centeredness and self-deserving, with no regard for how it might hurt others. And by hurting others, hurting God. We just lose our way. And in that way, there's a bizarre comfort in knowing that we are all in the same place. We are all in the same boat. We're not perfect. Which is another way of saying that we live unaware of God's presence, unaware of God's purpose for us, not listening to what God may be saying to us. So are we willing to confront that side of us? Are we willing to tend to those places, to confess those moments or those behaviors that keep us separated from others and from God? Are we willing, with God's help, to be reformed, recreated, do better on this faith journey? In college, I spent the summer months working for the city parks back home in Hudson, Ohio, where I grew up, mowing grass, prepping baseball fields, planting flowers, weeding flower beds, all summer long, and it was the best job I have ever had, except for this one, of course. I absolutely loved it. But there was one day that I will never forget. A couple of us were told to go to this obscure hiking trail that I had never been to in the 4 years that I worked for the parks. And when we got there, we were surprised that it was gorgeous. It was filled with these large oak trees and maple trees and wove through hills. And as we were walking on the path, I came across an old high school classmate. Ellen was home for the summer, taking a break from studying to be an opera singer on the East Coast. And I thought that was so cool because we were both in band together. We both played mellophone and marching band, and here she was, pursuing music. It was so nice catching up and just checking in to see where life had taken us. But then our conversation shifted, and I was unprepared for what she was going to say next. But in her demeanor, I could tell that it was going to be difficult. And what she told me was, "You teased me a lot in marching band." She said, there are points where it was more than teasing. It could have been bullying. And she said, I think you need to know that. I'll never forget that moment. Because I had to acknowledge a version of myself that I didn't want to acknowledge, a past that I did not want to deal with. But you see, there are times in life when we are confronted with a side of ourselves we don't care to see. Either we are ashamed or feel guilty or don't want to acknowledge that we make mistakes. In such times, are we willing, with God's help, to learn from our past, to be reformed, recreated, and do better? Biblical scholars point out that the Bible has one major plot, and it goes like this. God gives life. God establishes relationship, usually through covenant, and then the people's end of the relationship is to follow God's ways, which leads us to our third part of the plot, which is disobedience. And the fourth is grace. So we have life, relationship, disobedience, and grace. And we can see this in the Exodus narrative that Jeremiah quotes here in our passage. Because in that story, in the Hebrew text, the Israelites are given new life on the other side of the Red Sea. On Mount Sinai, God establishes a relationship through the Sinai covenant. And then God tells Moses in Genesis 19, verses 3 through 4, "You have seen what I did to the Egyptians and how I bore you on eagle's wings and brought you to myself. Now, therefore, if you obey my voice and keep my covenant, you shall be my treasured possession." Moses conveys this to the Israelites, and the text says that all of them responded with one voice, saying, "Everything that the Lord has spoken, we will do." And so Moses goes back up Sinai, gets a stone tablet, and then gets writing on there, and then carries it down, which we imagine was extremely heavy coming down the mountain. And that first commandment says, "You shall not make yourself an idol or bow down to worship another god." But what happens next? Not 12 chapters later, and the people are like, "God who? God who?" Because they're still camping on Mount Sinai when they construct a golden calf, assemble an altar, and begin sacrificing to it. Aaron even says, "Behold, this golden calf saved us from Egypt." So I think we can all agree with God's response. God calls them all stiff-necked people because it takes no time for them to break the number one rule. But just like that, they abandon God's Torah, God's instruction, God's law. So we got life, relationship, disobedience. Here comes the grace. Despite their disobedience, despite their short attention span to focus on God's ways, nevertheless, God commands Moses to make new tablets and restore the old covenant. God's willingness to forgive, to reform God's people for a greater purpose of life and justice, is too important to abandon them. So there we have it: life, relationship, disobedience, and grace. Again and again, we see this pattern through Israel's judges, through their kings, and through their prophets. That is, until we get to this morning's text. Jeremiah 31 is the only place in the Old Testament where God will not reestablish the old covenant, but instead make a brand new one for a new generation. It's almost as if God realized, wow, these people really can't be left to handle their end of the covenant. And so, in Jeremiah's context, God considers that covenant broken because God reports that the people are skilled at doing evil and don't know how to do good. God will point to the conditions of the cities and mass poverty as an indication that they are not following God's instruction. So out of concern for those who are suffering, God will help them find their way back to God by making a brand new covenant. But instead of being written on stone tablets, God will insert God's law or instruction in a place the people will never forget or lose it. God performs a sacred surgery and places it within their hearts. Forever, God will dwell within them no matter where they go on life's journey. God's ways are written on their hearts, and whenever life gets hard or they make mistakes, a piece of God is within them that will guide them to what leads to life, which always, always leads to God. God recalibrates the heart to beat with God's purpose, but it takes surgery to do that. I'm always amazed at some of the technological advances we have in the medical field. One of those treatments that I'm fascinated with is a pacemaker. Now, a pacemaker helps the heart to function as it is supposed to. It is surgically placed in the body, and it sends controlled electrical impulses to specific areas of the heart. in order to restore normal activity and improve heart function. You see, a pulse generator sends electrical signals through pacing leads to the exact heart of the heart that needs it. Now, the pacemaker is not making the heart beat. The heart is functioning and doing the work by itself, but every so often, the heart needs a little electrical impulse to put it back on track. A tiny nudge in the right direction. And so the pacemaker recalibrates the heart to stay on track. All the while, the person may not even know it's helping them, but it is. I will never forget that summer day on that hidden trail under the oak and maple trees where Ellen, with courage, told me the truth, and she was right. I needed to hear it. And Ellen may not have known this at the time, but I'm positive right now that through her, an electrical impulse went straight to my heart. Because through her, I realized through this courage that God lives in me, and that I was able to see life through her eyes and say the words that both her and I needed to hear. I'm sorry. You see, there are times in life where we are confronted with a side of ourselves we don't care to see. Either we're ashamed, or feel guilty, or simply don't want to acknowledge that we make mistakes. But under the skin, God is guiding us back into right relationship. And the covenant is right here on our hearts. So as we seek to be better, as we seek to be the best version of who God made us to be, as we seek justice in the world for all God's people, may you know in your heart that God is there to guide you on the right path. Even in these days where white supremacy is on full display, God is working to recalibrate our hearts. Even when 6 Asian Americans are killed and many more are threatened because of their race, God is working to recalibrate all of our hearts. And when Christians call same-sex union sin, and other Christians within our own community deliver that same message from their pulpits, God is working to recalibrate all of our hearts. When we hurt those closest to us, our loved ones, our family and friends, we push them away, God is working to recalibrate our hearts and lead us to life. In Lent, we take notice and reflect on our lives. We turn inward to see if we have fallen short of what God created us to be. And we honestly embrace our ego and confess those times where we lost our way. And we say the words both we and God long to and need to hear. We say, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. And from those words, we are met with the undeserved, steadfast grace, and with it, an opportunity to be better. Friends, this is salvation. Because by God's grace, our hearts will beat again as one with God's. So may we encourage, confess, may we have faith and trust in God's grace. And may we remember and keep God's ways now and always. And for those who do so, we'll say, this is a day of new beginnings. May it be so. Amen. Let us join in our next hymn, This is a Day of New Beginnings.